The Instructor Podcast with Terry Cook, talking with leaders, innovators, experts and game changers about what drives them.
Welcome to the Instructor Podcast. As always, I am your host, Terry Cook. I'm delighted to be here, but I'm even more delighted that you have chosen to listen, because we are back with another edition of the In Conversation series with. So over the next few episodes, I'm sitting down with Lee Jowett for some proper long-form conversations about the driving instructor industry. Not quick takes, not sound bites, and definitely not how to pass a test in 10 easy steps. These are slower, deeper discussions about what actually matters and how we train instructors, how we assess them, where the industry is heading, and why some of the systems we work within feel misaligned, to put it politely. This series isn't about agreeing on everything either. There are moments of challenge, there's moments of frustration, and there's moments where we sit with uncomfortable questions. And that's exactly the point. Now, a quick heads up before we get into it. This In Conversation series is released first and in full for premium members. They get early access, ad-free episodes, and a growing library of content that goes way beyond what you hear on the public feed, including deep dives, expert sessions, live discussions, and space to actually think, reflect, and develop. If you value conversation like this, the kind that don't rush, don't oversimplify, and don't talk down to you, premium is where this podcast really stretches its legs. So you can find the full details in the show notes or at www.patreon.com/theinstructor. But for now, let's get stuck into this first episode. Lee Jowett, how are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
All the better for seeing your smiley face.
And me dogs.
Thank you for agreeing to this In Conversation with me, and thank you for inviting me to over home and letting me play with your dogs.
That's all right. my youngest dogs took a shine to you, obviously, so.
Yep. Well, I think I've established that if anyone wants me to do a podcast in person, dogs are the way to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm quite looking forward to spending some time with you. But let's start off by hearing about your journey. So I want to go kind of right back to the beginning of becoming an instructor. And I suppose actually the first thing I'm curious of is, what was your mindset coming in? You know, were you of the mindset of you want to be the best instructor in the world and you want to bring in all this coaching and psychology stuff, which you're obviously a big part of now, or were you a bit more, let's just shower people until they drive properly?
That's a good question. I came into the industry because I wanted to teach. I didn't know when I was like 13, 14, 15, whatever. I just wanted to play football then. But as I was working and et cetera, really hit home to me that I wanted to teach. And that was what brought me into the industry, because, you know, when you're working and you're earning money, to actually at that point stop working and going into university. I was doing a job. I'd left a job that I'd been in for a long time. I've actually spoke about this on another podcast, but the guy will never know how big a favor he did for me when he was managing director of a company that I worked for about 2 months. And I was the only person at the time working with him. I was supposed to be managing two warehouses. The day he came out of his office in a full taekwondo outfit and put on a full-on exhibition of taekwondo in front of me while I'm sat at a desk, just looking, thinking, Jeremy Beadle or someone's going to walk out in a minute. And he was like telling me, and telling me it's all in the snap, and kicking his legs and telling me that, his legs are like a coiled spring. That was the one. So needless to say, I didn't stay in that job. But it was that really that sort of sold the seed. Cause then I was thinking, well, what are you going to do? What do you actually want to do? And I always wanted to teach, and then it just hit me just one day, you know, why not become a driving instructor? You don't have to do the 3-4 years in university. So through that, going back to the question that you asked, is that when I came into the industry doing what I did, because it was then, you know, you told people, I didn't shout at people necessarily, but you told people what to do, why they needed to do it, etc. And I just looked at it. I was lucky. I think I've been very lucky. But when I came into the industry initially, it was at a time when things were about to change. I don't know how much they've actually changed, if I'm honest, but, you know, the thought of the change was greater than what's followed, I think. And then also quite fortunate, because not everybody has Claire Wilmot living 2 miles up the road to be your first mentor as you come into the industry. So, and the short answer is no, I didn't come into it. I mean, I did come into it to be the best that I could be, though. I mean, literally my first interaction with Claire was me phoning her up and saying, I need to work for your driving school because I need you to mentor me. And her saying, well, we don't usually take people on that I've not trained myself. And then me going, yes, but I've researched you and I've seen all the things that you've done and I need to do that. So I need you. And she was like, right, okay. I'm like, I need you to tell me what books I can read. I need you to tell me what courses I can go on. I need to know how I can get all the information I need because I want to be as good as I can be. She's like, okay, well, on that basis, I'd be more than happy to meet up with you and see if we think it can work out between us. And that basically led me to take a franchise with Claire's driving school, Latics, which was brilliant for me, because then I had all the training, support, mentorship, advice, etc. that I needed in the early stages. I don't know if coaching wasn't becoming a thing at that time. I'm not sure that I'd still be a driving instructor because I didn't really enjoy being a driving instructor. And if there was nowhere else to go, I also didn't feel it was particularly, I mean, telling somebody what to do is fine for skills development. But in terms of actual learning, because I look at it as being development and skills development and learning and knowledge and understanding. Well, you can give somebody knowledge, but you can't give them understanding. You have to help them to gain it. And so I always looked at it and thought there was a huge thing missing from it. And so ultimately, it was that interest in the bit that was missing, I think, that took me down the lines of really being really fascinated by coaching as soon as I, you know, as soon as I like was aware of it, as soon as I started applying that to teaching. And yeah, I think had it not been for that, then I don't know what would have happened.
See, I think that's really interesting, and I don't think most people will do what you did there, which is go and research and find someone out and go and do it. You know, I didn't. When I started, I told this story before, but I started off with Red Driving School, and the reason I went with Red is because they were the first people that popped up on my Google search. Admittedly, when I did look into them and speak to them, that I was impressed by them. And I've said it before that I actually had a good experience with Red. I know a lot of people haven't, don't shout at me, but, you know. So, but I like that. But I think, do you know, while we're talking about this, I think it's probably a good point to discuss it, which is that idea of how people come into the industry and why they come into the industry. Mm. Because I was talking to Tom Stenson about this recently, because, you know, he's a big advocate of proper checks and you know, new, getting people in the right way, if you like. And I'm the same, but I didn't come in that way. Tom, you know, he openly says, I come in not to, if you'd have come to me back then, I wouldn't have done it this way, sort of thing. So if, when I come into this industry, if there'd have been these protocols in place that maybe you and I might champion, I probably wouldn't be here. I probably would have looked at it and gone, yeah, no, not for me. I need to find something more simple. But, and potentially even you, you know, going off what you've said, is there a risk that we do actually turn people away if we put some of the protocols, for lack of a better term, that perhaps we speak about?
I think there's always a risk. And so then you'd have to look at it and go, do we do enough then when people have got through the door, you know, and looking at where we are currently? Well, the answer to that's definitely no. What measures are in place when people get through the door? Because I think that, you know, going to what you've said, I look at it and I think it really is crucial. There needs to be 31. It needs to be 31 and a pass. And I think it's, you know, some people go, oh God, I only scraped a 31. You proved on the day that you could demonstrate a lesson that kept the car safe and was adequate to develop somebody. So there needs to be a foot in the door. I don't know. I'm struggling to run it through my head and think, well, do I think it would be an issue if some people didn't get through the door? Would it have stopped me getting to a door? I suppose it's all how much you want it, isn't it? And, you know, I don't think the qualification process is adequate now for what it is. In fact, it never was. It's just that it was adequate to pass you part three when I qualified. And then this is what I'm, you know, sort of come to the realization that 2 years that I spent of having qualified, not knowing what the hell I was doing, was actually 2 years that I probably should have spent still training. And I think a lot of the issue we've got with where we are at the minute with, you know, qualification, people just aren't ready. You could be ready to tell an examiner what to do to an extent that he'd do it if you told him the right thing at the right time. But it's nowhere near, it doesn't even touch the sides when it comes to having the ability to just intrinsically know a person and what this person's doing, about to do, could possibly do, and have the tools that you need to deal with that when the classroom's moving and develop them. So probably a long-winded answer that hasn't answered anything. If I was to pick an opinion right now, I'd say, yeah, let's go for it. Let's go for it. You know, let's make it better. Let's do something.
It's something I've been thinking about a lot recently, and my answer is, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because it's like, there's going to be an exception to every rule, you know, so you are potentially exceptions to the rule, and that you've come in and gone, I'm going to research and find this person. And when they say no, I'm going to go after him and after and after him. You know, I almost think back, that's what the best coaches do. That's what entrepreneurs do. That's what I think Dan Meredith's story, if anyone don't know Dan Meredith, it's like a business coach, but he wanted to be taught by this chap called Dexter Abraham, and he's gone over to America to find him. And I'm not taking on any mentees at the minute. Right, okay, you will. And he's pestered and pestered and pestered until he's eventually taken him on. And it reminds me a little bit of that story. I just think the whole thing needs an overhaul. And, you know, maybe that's not what we get into today, because that could be a six-hour podcast in itself. But I don't think there's ever a perfect system. I think that's a problem. I think you're always going to be able to find faults in system. You know, I often think, like, what if there was a way the trainers are vetted properly? So that first test you do is with a trainer, not the examiner. And then once you pass that test, you're on it like a probation for a year. Then you have that, you stand the check, essentially. Then I'm thinking, well, hold on, because that year is, if you're not good enough, you're now training, shoot, still training. You know, so I think there's always pros and cons, but you mentioned, like, the 31. My first standards check, which came after the old style part three, I got a really low score, like 31, 32, something like that. But I literally went in with a goal of passing, because it was 6 months after the old, and I, you know, so it were like, I just want to pass, that's it. And then I'll get better. Mm. That was my mindset. And I still think she was soft on me. I still think she saw that there was something there and let me go. But then I also think sometimes there's people failing for something that I don't think they should fail for, you know, and I think we look at the entirety of the lesson was good, and there's this one thing, and you think you just, that it, you know, and I don't know, but maybe we'll come on to that a bit more later on, because I want to talk a bit more about you and your journey, because that's kind of how you got into it. So tell me from there, tell me about you, how you developed and the courses you've been on and how you evolved into the man you are today.
That suggests that it defines who I am, which is interesting. Contributes. Yeah. Coaching, certainly. It's a fascinating thing for me, coaching, because, and I've heard other people say it, but it's definitely something that, that hits home when you got, when you adopt a coaching mindset, it just becomes part of who you are. But it fits better, far better for me than instruction ever did. I'm not a teller. Qualified, I always forget whether it was 2009 or 10, but it was 2009 in April. I worked part-time as an instructor when I first qualified and continued to do a day job, working for a company called Flannels, a big fashion retailer. And then when I went full time, that was just after I'd met Claire. Just really quickly then from there, because I was just keen. I was just, I think I'd tell you the other thing that benefited me was that I looked at what I was doing and it didn't feel like it was anywhere near enough. It wasn't like, this is great. This is everything. This is all I will do and all that. I was really disappointed with what driving instruction was. When I looked at it, I was like, so you just tell somebody what to do enough times and then back off a bit, ask them some questions and then leave them to do it themselves. It just really didn't seem like that's it, I just started really, really early. First coaching course I did was, because coaching wasn't even in the industry then. It was 2010. And bear in mind, the standards check didn't come in while 2014, but the national standards were published in April of 2011. So those people who were ahead of the game, the likes of Claire Wilmot and, Sue McCormack and Ian Edwards at the time was still in this industry. Those people who knew what was coming. So first coaching course I did was with Claire Wilmot and Cathy Higgins. I think Jed also contributed to sort of creating the course, but it was those two that delivered it. And from there I took that and it just resonated with me. And I took it and I just coached really badly for about 12 months. Literally, if you asked me a question, I'd just be coming back with a question all the time. It was literally like driving with the Riddler. It had its benefits and I could see them. I found people forgot a lot less. People retained a lot more. And generally, other than the little niggles, they developed quicker. They struggled with the little niggles because I'd just constantly be trying to get them to figure it out. Even when they couldn't figure it out, they'd have to figure it out. So, but generally they developed, quicker. It was more Q&A than it was coaching, a lot of it. It was something that really made a difference to me. As I say, I look at that and I think I did that for about 12 months, which was to instruct. And then very fortunately, I found coaching really early. I did my first check test with Nigel Robinson, who ended up being head of ADI, who now does training in our side of the industry. But he did my first check test and I actually coached on it.
Yeah.
Just coached on it as well before it was even part of. So, yeah, that caused, I didn't fail it, but it caused issues because he had comments about coaching and its uses and his thoughts on it. And then when I passed those thoughts to Claire. She wasn't particularly happy with them. And that led me into a room at Rochdale Test Centre with him, Jed, Claire, and about four other people from DVSA to discuss these comments. And which, when you're about 2 years into the job, you're like, oh my God, what am I doing here? I didn't really want to be there, but yeah. So that was interesting. More courses. Ian Edwards did a 2-day coaching course at Doncaster with him. That was really interesting. I think that helped me to see how much I didn't know about coaching. You know, when you think you've been coaching for like a year, and so I think, you know, even if you've done a course on something and you find another one, go and do it. You'll find out what you don't know, you know, and it'll reinforce some of the things that you are doing. So that was great. It was a 2-day one. So that was 2011, so, you know, about 10 months late or something like that. And then other courses, I did Diane Hall's course. It's funny because I've done it about 10 times now, because I've hosted it several times. And whenever she's around here, she just allows me to go. And I think it's the first time I met you, yeah, when on Diane Hall's course, which that's one of the ones that I'd organized with Diane to bring over the road here. I've done that about 10 times. Really interesting, brilliant stuff. And then I did the BTEC with Tri Coaching, so a level 4 BTEC in coaching for driver development. I think that really was, it's not that on its own, but it was a phenomenal course. It really did like blow the doors open on coaching and really helped me to get a mindset on it. And then from there, Cranfield University with Dr. Lisa Dawn, driver psychology courses. But also another thing that benefited me massively was, at the time she was running a course that she had devised herself, where as a trainee you'd go to drivers from fleet companies and you'd go and see them. Now, it wasn't fleet training as fleet training is known, because it was all around psychometric profiling and people's high risk behavioral tendencies and addressing those with that person in the car. So it was really fascinating, because you're coaching them around it rather than, you know, telling them how to drive. You're coaching them around who they are as a person. You're raising their awareness and getting them to consider, you know, this states that you've got aggression in your personality. That doesn't mean you're aggressive, doesn't mean, but it means that you have that trait in your personality. So, you know, because you get a lot of reluctance, and understandably so, for somebody to go, oh, yeah, I'm really aggressive, me. But, you know, you get them to consider if that tendency, if that trait was to arise in your driving, what difference would it make? You know, and you go and get them to drive and push them a little bit, you know, just, okay, imagine you've got aggressive now, or imagine an aggressive driver. What would they be doing? How would they react in this situation? And then you scale it back and you get them to sort of go the other way, and, you know, and then a compare and contrast. So it was really interesting. They were really probably some of the most interesting, I think, work that I've done. So that was that. And then from there, I ended up delivering the BTEC for Tri Coaching. So that kicked, you know, the scale massively for me in terms of understanding, because one thing doing the qualification, but to really know and understand all of the content through being able to deliver it, and then after, you know, deeply understand all of the content itself, I mean, that just changed the game for me. So, I probably missed stuff, but it was just an ongoing, ever-going conferences, workshops, you know, and seeing the same people. It was really interesting, because everywhere I went, I just tended to see the same people. And all those people now are the people that, you know, that I see on stage at the conferences and Stuart Lockery, Kev Field, not Tracy, but Circus, she wasn't in the industry at the time, but Kev, Ray Seagrave, Fiona Taylor, and all those people were the same people that I saw everywhere for like 10 years, you know? So really interesting that it's kind of a little group of us that try coaching. It kind of really helped us to get, kind of, I don't know, for want of a better way of saying it, but where we've got to, sort of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think try coaching is, a lot of people won't know who try coaching are now. Yeah. And I just think they had such a big impact, not necessarily to individual driving instructors, but to the likes of you, like you said, you and Stuart and Ray and all the people that were in there, and the influence that you've then had on the industry. I used to joke about the instructor podcast being like Napster. You know, you come along, you change the industry, and then bugger off. It almost feels like try coaching were like that. You know, that's, as I think of it now, they come along and then they create you, which is Spotify, and Bright Coaching, which is Apple, you know, or whatever it is. But I want to ask you about qualifications, because I have changed my mind on qualifications quite dramatically this year. So I'm keen to know your thoughts. And when I'm talking qualifications, I'm not just referring to like a BTEC. I'm on about like the every qualification, the certificate you get at the end of a course, you know, how important are they? What are your thoughts on them?
Okay. I think it depends on, obviously on the course would be my first thing. But it depends what you do with them afterwards. I mean, I've given you feedback on what you've done with the Instructor podcast, because I love it, because you can do as many courses and workshops as you want, but if you walk out of there, throw it in the drawer and don't go and put any of it into practice, you will get exactly zero from what you've done. So they're important, but they're only as important as what you do with them. Mm. And then I think, you know, additionally to that, I've only ever really done courses and training that aligns with what's interested me. For example, I've never done a single advanced driving course. I've not done anything around advanced driving because it's not the sort of practical side of it. It's not the skills side of it that interests me at all. That's not what drives me. And I also have concerns over how much skill we develop in, you know, young novice drivers. So I don't know. I think research, you know, to anyone thinking about doing any courses, research the course itself, see if it fits with what you want to get out of it, and research the people that are delivering, you know, the content, or that create the content, so that you know and understand, you know, what you're going to get out of it and what you can expect from the people that are delivering it. I think it can be really, really, really important, but I think there's also the chance that you could do hours and hours and hours, or days and days and days of courses, and get very little value from it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When you say research, what are you looking for? So someone listens to this now and they're hearing you say research a course. What should they be researching? What are the things that they should be looking for?
I would suggest that if you're going to do something, you should have a reason for doing it. I always had a reason for doing what I was going to do. If I was going to do something, like one of the things that never put me off, although, you know, it's not putting me off, but it's the time being right, was the cost of the course. You know, try coaching's BTEC was at, I think it was 1,300 quid. And that's, you know, that's back when we were charging about 18 quid a lesson. It's, you know, it's a significant outlay, but oh God, was it worth it? You know, because I went and did something with it. Ian Edwards' course obviously wasn't cheap. You're getting a cheap course off Ian Edwards is absolutely brilliant. Neither, you know, was Dr. Lisa Dawns. You know, she's just next level. All of that was expensive. I wasn't looking at price. I was looking for what is the outline of the content. Does it fit? Are there things within that that interest me that I think, oh, I've got to know more about that. I've got to know more about that. That'll benefit me. That'll help me. That's what I need. And then also the person or people that were developing it, because who are they and what have they done? You know, what are they going to be able to sort of give me? And that's where I was lucky with having Claire, because you know Claire Wilmot, then you know everybody. You don't, but she does. Mm. So you turn around and go, I'm thinking about doing this, Claire. Oh, that's with Graham and Sue, isn't it? Yeah, do you know them? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was at the University of Central London with them. Of course you were. Oh, you've got to do it. Yeah, if you can afford it, you've got to do it. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. So, you know, Claire was my bank of research as well. You know, having somebody to be able to make recommendations or that you can run them through is useful, but, you know, not everyone's lucky enough to have that. But I think it's a lot easier these days, because when I started, it was difficult to find courses. You know, it weren't. There was no instructor podcast. There wasn't the use of social media that there is now for courses and groups and instructors. So it really was a case of, you know, finding things. And I think Try Coaching, I came across a bit by chance. Can't remember how, but I remember going, oh, there's a level 4 BTEC in coaching for driving. Oh, I've got to do that. Let me have a look at it. And I'm like, oh, okay. Oh, that's, oh God, yeah, I've got to do that, And then, right, who are these people? And that's, you know, spoke to Claire and she's like, oh yeah, you've got to do it. Brilliant. For me, I think, yeah, you've got to know what the content is. It's got to fit. We've had some people, not many. We have, you know, very, very lucky. I mean, you know, it's not making the exception the rule. I think we've had 2 people in 3.5 years, over 1,000 people come and done our courses. We've had 2. The funniest one was, there was a woman at York who, she came on the course, and after about an hour, presenting, I was going through some of the content, and she sat there and she stuck her hand up. So I said, yeah. She said, when are you going to just tell us what we need to say? I said, well, what do you mean? She said, when are you going to just tell us what we need to say? I said, what, on a standards check, when are we going to tell you what to say? Yeah. I said, we're not. At no point are we going to do that. But it actually says, if you go onto our website and read our standards check and client-centered learning workshop synopsis, it literally, the first thing it says is, unlike other courses that simply tell you what to say, this course will not do that. Like, it literally says it. Did you not look on the website when you booked the course? So I think we've only had 2 people though, but it just saves you and the people presenting it, you know, that pain of that person who, you know, then decided in the afternoon to go and sit downstairs in the bar and make a show of herself. And, you know, but we're fortunate because we've only ever had 2 people that we've ever considered asking to leave a course. So I think if you research the course and research who you're going to be or who the trainers are, then you can get a good idea of whether it's going to be right for you or not. And I think that's important.
I think cost is interesting as well, because I always view cost as it shouldn't be a deterrent, but it is a deciding factor. Mm. You know, we use Bright Coach as an example here, because they're probably the most expensive course. I mean, I'm guessing. If you can't afford a Bright Coaching course, okay, cool. Can you afford a 1-day workshop? Mm. Right, well, if you can't afford a 1-day workshop, can you afford an online thing? If you can't afford an online thing, can you afford a membership to somewhere? And if you can't afford a membership, well, there's a free podcast out there I could recommend. You know, so you kind of work your way down through that, I think. But I'm keen to ask you, because you kind of mentioned the person there, that the people, research the people. Because I think me and you have slightly different views on this, so I'm intrigued by this. The individual And I think this applies more to one-on-one training, if I'm being honest, but the individual really matters to me, the individual person. And I may be misremembering this, and I can't remember the details. So if I'm misremembering, please tell me to shut up. But pretty sure I saw a post by you recently on Facebook talking about almost, again, I'm paraphrasing, but being nice isn't the important thing.
Yeah.
I swear the other way on that, and I'll happily share that in a minute, but where does that sit in your hierarchy, that the quality of the individual as opposed to the quality of what they're providing?
That's a great question. Right. So I think defining niceness.
It's a podcast for us now.
Yeah. And everything on a scale. I think I'd be equally off put by someone who's off the scale nice than off the scale unnice. I think there's got to be, there's a balance, you know, but I'm not particularly interested in how nice somebody is. There are some great trainers who probably sit right in the middle of being, you know, you want this. I would describe Dr. Lisa Dawn as being absolutely fascinating, brilliant, and somebody that I've gained so much from. Would I sit back and go, she's really, really nice? She's not unnice. But also on the flip side, she's not there sugarcoating things and making things appear to be. She's tell it like it is, give you the facts, give you the information. And if she needs to move the course on, she will just move the course on. Yeah. She makes the course work. So that's not saying Dr. Lee Stone isn't nice or an incredible person, but she doesn't have to be worrying about being nice. She just be who she is. And she's absolutely phenomenal. Like, just wow, what a person to gain from. If somebody, because, you know, especially with group learning, if you're trying to please everybody, you're probably going to please nobody. And I do think we have an issue in the industry, personally, again, you know, with all personal opinions, but I think it's not just the industry, it's life in general. You know, when people can identify as a cat in school, then I think there's an issue somewhere. You know, you're not a cat. You might want to identify as a cat, but you're not one. And I think largely we have an issue. And I think where it goes in this industry is that you need understanding. You definitely need knowledge. You definitely then need experience, because knowledge and experience leads to understanding. And I think you need to be all the way at that level where you've got developed understanding to actually be a trainer that is beneficial to the industry. And I think at the minute we sit in this position of niceness where everybody can just do what they want to do. There's what you want and there's what you need. Standards check and part threes are a great example of that in relation to our industry, because it's not our job to give a pupil what they want. It's our job to give them what they need. Now, as trainers, I think it's really important that we give the industry what it needs, not what you want. Have you got the skills, knowledge, and experience to give the industry what it needs? And so, niceness, I think I'm a nice person, but I think this isn't the industry for niceness. I think, you know, you're not going to save 1,680 people by simply being nice. I think there's a lot more that's important, and then niceness comes in somewhere down the scale.
Annoyingly, I think we're closer aligned than I thought we were. I like it when I've got something to debate a little bit, and I think we're closer aligned. But I am going to push back maybe the wrong phrase just on a couple of things potentially. I'll counter maybe. Because I think, like the cat comment you made, I think that's really interesting, because it almost touches back on what we were saying before about the exception to the rule. Mm. I think that's the exception to the rule. I think there's not many kids identifying as cats in schools. I think there was one where the teacher let him get away with it. And I can remember going to school and identifying as an eagle. I want this to be an eagle one day. So I played as being an eagle, and all teachers just humoured me and let me get on with it. And like a week later, I was no longer an eagle. I was like a mountain lion or something. And I think that it's easy to look at that one incident or instance, sorry, which I may misremember, I think was wildly exaggerated by the Daily Mail to be made into something much more big than it was. I could be misremembering that. But I think it's easy to look at that and go, this is what we don't want. But I get why you made that point. But I do agree with the niceness stuff largely, I think. I think that my stance on it is, you hear me a lot talk about don't be a dick.
Yes.
I'm a dick. Right? I could, you know, I love saying no to people. It's fun. And like, I've got a whole thing, I've got a session lined up for next year talking about why and the pros and cons of using the word why. Now, a lot of the time we shouldn't be asking the question why. I ask that question intentionally to be challenging, right? Because I'm a dick sometimes. But I also go out of my way to be a good person. I do. I genuinely do, because and like the idea of offence, I've got a thing about offence where you'll get some people, and to a degree, rightly so, saying offence is taken, not given. I still don't want to offend anyone. I'd rather not. I'd rather just keep everyone happy. But when it comes to the industry, I think you're right in the sense of we have to get it right. But I also look at it and think, who am I going to give an opportunity to? And I think you've got to tick both boxes for me. Like, as a platform on the podcast, as an example, I use you as an example. You know what you're talking about, and you're a decent bloke. Therefore, you come on podcast. If you don't know what you're talking about, but you're a decent bloke, you're not coming on. If you're not a decent bloke, but you're the most intelligent person, well, you're still not coming on, because I don't want dicks on my podcast, despite what just said about me. So I just think it's all a balancing act. But I think that anyone that is, how can I put this? I've got more time for someone that is trying to do a good job whilst being nice than someone who is trying to do a good job not being nice. I think that's how I look at it. Maybe nice is the wrong word. Maybe it's just like not being a dick. Although, like I just said, I am sometimes. But I don't know. I think it's interesting that concept, because I think we have to get these skills and the foundations of what we're doing correct as instructors, as trainers. But I also know who I'm more likely to listen to. There's pairings out there where I will listen to one and not the other. And they will remain nameless. And that's no offense to the other. Often that's just that I don't connect with that person as well. But I will connect with the other. Yeah. I think I'm going to leave that there. Is there anything you want to touch on that?
It is an interesting one, like, as you've said, because on one hand, I've always struggled with self-evaluation, funnily enough. Promote it in others, struggled myself with it. But I think I'm a nice person. I think I'm a very nice person, and like to do nice things. And I like nice people, and I like nice people who do nice things. I think it's more of an industry thing though as well, that I look at it and go, it's all great being nice, you know? But again, this is not really, it's not an industry for niceness as such. As important as being nice is, you know, you're going to get your message across if the majority of people think you're a dick. You know, your message isn't going to get across. It's just, I don't place it number one in the list of priorities. And I think we're in danger at the minute, is my worry, where that's going higher and higher up the list of priorities at the expense of things that, in my opinion, are maybe more important. So I hope that explains it. But it's an interesting one.
And we're just taking a brief pause from the episode because I want to tell you about the membership that I run, currently called the Instructor Premium. Genuinely, This isn't for every driving instructor. If you're happy doing the job exactly the same way you've always done it, if CPD, confidence, or how you run your business never really crosses your mind, then it's probably not for you. But if you do think about your teaching, if you've ever second-guessed yourself after a lesson, or if you care about more than just getting someone through a driving test, that's who Premium exists for. It's not about being perfect. It's about being reflective, curious, and wanting to do the job properly, including the bits no one trains you for. So if that sounds like you, there is a link in the show notes or go to patreon.com/theinstructor and take a look. If it feels slightly uncomfortable, in a good way, you're probably exactly who it's aimed for.
I think it falls for me with cost. So maybe I'd have cost a decent human being and knowledge as my three deciding factors. If you don't tick any of them, then you're not in my wheelhouse. I think that's where I'd fall. But I want to ask you about experience as well. So if someone's looking for training qualifications, and I'm not specifically meaning like at what point should you start training, I'm not meaning that, but just experience in general, how highly would that rank on your list of things you look for in someone?
Experience,
say as a trainer, if you were, again, I'm not on about at what point you start training, but in terms of the quantity of experience.
Well, I think the thing with experience, as I see it, is what are you experiencing? Because if you're doing the same thing badly for multiple years, then it's not really that beneficial. So you have to read between the lines maybe a little bit. You know, you can see, you know, somebody's CV will show you what they want you to see, but you can see the lines. So there's experience and there's experience. Have they got different types of experience? Have they been taken in different ways? Are they being asked to share that experience in different places? And those places, are they places that you would value? Why is experience really important? Because it develops your understanding. I think knowledge alone, all you can do really with knowledge alone is parrot what you've been told. So you take what somebody's told you, and it can be the most wonderful thing that you've ever heard, and then you go and put it into practice. And it might be the worst thing. When you put it into practice. For me being an example of, you know, going and doing a brilliant coaching course and then coaching badly for at least 12 months. Nobody knew except, well, I didn't even know at the time, but nobody knows except me. Any of my former pupils who hear this, no, you're not having a refund. I think experience helped me because it gave me understanding. Because I got the knowledge, I got the experience, and from that came the understanding. And it's not enough for me, I don't think. Where would I put that marker? I don't know. Because again, it's like somebody's done this job for 30 years. I place very little value in that. You know, okay, so you've done the same job. You know, you've got to see the context behind the experience. Somebody's done the job for 6 months, 12 months, 2 years. What I think with that time period, but again, this is based on my experience. Sorry, it's covering my mic up there. But this is based on my experience. And so it's not to say that this is 100% of the time for everybody. Of course, it's not, but there's an amount of time. My first 2 years, I was beating myself up that I can still remember it today, every single day coming home going, what were you doing? What were you're supposed to be helping these people? What were you thinking? It didn't work. Why couldn't you fix it? Why couldn't you help them? And that was on a daily basis. So my first 2 years, when I look at it now, was just me simply developing the knowledge and understanding through the experience that I was gaining, but I needed that experience. If I hadn't gone into training at any point around there, I just simply wouldn't have been able to help anyone because I didn't know what to do myself at that point. So yes, great question. Probably one that hasn't got a single answer, but I think it's important because it's the understanding from the other side of it. And it's also, you know, it's what have they done? What is their experience? What, you know, and does it align with what you want to get out of the training that you're receiving?
I'm already enjoying this episode because I think you've already broken the record for a number of times of someone saying great question, so, which I just think just gives you time to think of an answer. That's why you say it, but yeah. I'm going to take it as a compliment. But do you know what? You mentioned a few times today about self-evaluation and self-reflecting and stuff. And I give myself, I'm genuinely really good at self-reflect. I'm not always good in the moment. Mm. You know, I'm human. I'll say things, I'll do things. And then the next day I go, yeah, that wasn't great. But I'm really good at looking back at reflecting and knowing where I am and knowing who I am. And I do like to be contrary. So sometimes I have to check whether I'm doing something for the sake of being contrary or whether it just is. But I think I'm a little bit the opposite sometimes to what a lot of people are. And I often drawn to less experience, not all the time, but because I find that, and I think this works better for someone that, how can I phrase this? For someone like me who's quite experienced, going to someone with less experience can work better because they provide fresh challenges. They're often more enthusiastic. I realize that's a different trait, but and often they've got ideas. And I think when you go to someone that maybe is potentially a bit set in their ways, they're doing the same thing. You go to someone new and they're more sometimes keen to try new stuff. And a lot of the time it falls on its, you know, flat on its face. But I'm like, I love that they try it. And it's one of the things I try and do. I keep not just with a podcast, not just with training, but like even driving lessons. I still try and just bring in new stuff and that again. Let's see if this works. And then, yeah, no, don't do that again. Sorry, that wasn't a wise idea. You know, so yeah, I think I like a mixture. That's probably it, I think. But speaking of training then, tell me about your transition, not into a cat, to into a trainer and how you found that role initially and in comparison to how you feel it now.
So I would say for me with anything that I do, as an example of this, would be, you know, so the person who did my initial training to be a driving instructor, still a really, really, it was probably my closest, friend in the industry. And it wasn't Mick Knowles. local trainer, driving instructor, runs a driving school in this area called Charles Royal. Now, I would say that my memory of the first three-hour training sessions we did was me going, I'm so sorry, I'll do the next one. And that was about all I did. Because when you sat with someone and you're looking at them and you think, oh my God, it's like I could never talk to Claire Wilmot. Because I looked at her and just thought how amazing she is. I could never talk. Well, I could eventually to Sue McCormack. I couldn't talk to Dr. Lisa Dawn. I'm just like, you know, I'm not worthy of talking to these people is, you know, the way my brain looks at it. So when you put that into me becoming a trainer, what it meant was it took me a long time to come out of a shell, you know, I didn't do any of the courses or training really that I did. I mean, I did train the trainer to do training, but I never did any of this really to, with the mindset of going one day, I did want to be Claire Wilmot on one hand, but you know, when you picture yourself individually, it wasn't with the mindset that one day I want to be on stage speaking at a conference, you know, in order for me to get there to that point, it's a big journey. You know, there are people that have been ADIs for a couple of years that have, they've either sort of done that or they were lined up to do it. I couldn't have done that at that point because for me to put myself out there, the first thing I did really that put myself out there beyond taking somebody who wasn't a driving instructor and teaching them to be a driving instructor, that area of training, but training in terms of what we do now, first thing I did was the ebooks that I wrote, and I wrote them through COVID, Meet the Standards. And that was me really taking it. I remember putting the first one out on Facebook and just sitting there like almost cringing, waiting for the reaction. And so I'm not somebody that can dive into something quickly and, you know, fake it till you make it. I have to have not made, you know, but you get from that saying, I would have to be at the make it stage. I couldn't fake it till, so it took a long time. It took a long time, 10 years from qualifying to putting my ebooks out. And then, when we formed Knowledgeable, and then writing our courses and delivering our courses. What have I noticed since then? What I've noticed is that I'm a lot more confident in what I'm doing now. I'm a lot more confident that the experience that I've gained and the understanding that I've got is, at least in terms of where I want to be, or where I feel like I need to be, the understanding's where it needs to be. It will continue to grow and develop. And, you know, there's something that you were saying earlier that, it was about, you know, liking people maybe with less, and I totally get that, because my biggest concern is that we get to a point where we're right, well, you can't write any more courses, you haven't got any time to deliver them. So then what? You know, there has to be something, there has to be a next thing, there has to be, that's what's kept me going. So there's always going to need to be a next thing. And I think that's really important. But yeah, it did take me a long time really to go, okay, I kind of know a bit about this. If anyone would like to know a bit more about this, I kind of know a bit about it. Without feeling like people are just going to go, no, you don't know anything.
Your ebooks, those first three, was it called Meet the Standards?
Meet the Standard, yeah.
Stand the test of time, mate. They're still high quality work. I'm not saying that because I'm weird. You know, I'll tell you, probably wouldn't tell the podcast if I thought it was crap. That's what I recorded and tell you. But yeah, I bought them when you first released them. I saw them on Facebook and let's go see what these are. And I read them at the time. In fact, I think I've reread them this year. You know, I don't return to work like that very often. So, you know, I'll include a link for that in the show notes if anyone wants them. But yeah, they stand the test time. They were good quality work. And that's not dismissing anything else you've done, but I think you should be proud of them, especially considering how early that was in comparison to everything else. One of the interesting things, just purely from a selfish perspective or a self-indulgent perspective, was the difference between you and I, in that you were saying when you sat next to this person, you felt like you couldn't talk to them. I'm 100% the opposite. I get excited, right? This is the podcast. It's me sitting next to someone who knows more about me than a thing, and now I get to find out those things. You know, just a couple of quick examples were just when I was at Parliament last week.
Yeah,
we're in the queue. It's me, Tom Stenson, and Sarah Hall, and I think Kate Monk was there as well at that point. But Tom's like, that's Ollie Taylor back there. So we're in Parliament in a queue of some very important people, and I run down the queue to go and see Ollie Taylor. Hug. And there's just people looking like, I'm like, it's Ollie Taylor. And then you get in the room, there's Sharon Huddleston there. I'm like, I need to go talk to Sharon. And it's just me getting excited because I get to go, and that's reverse back to that guy that said I'm like the 13-year-old. Yeah, yes, I am. Because I get to go and speak to this person about this thing. It doesn't have to be psychology or whatever. It could be someone who I respect about football. And I get to go, or someone I'm not even interested in. You know, it's Gary Thomas breaks amazing bread, right? I want to go find out where he makes his bread. I'm not going to do it, but I'm interested. And it gets me excited. So I don't know, just the difference there amused me. But for anyone listening again that's listening now, considering I want to be a trainer, maybe we'll dive into this a bit more deeper later on perhaps, but considering I want to be a trainer, What do you say to them? Someone asks you that. Well, I want to be a trainer. What do you say to them?
Why would be the first question. What advice would I give them? Probably pick an area of expertise, because I would be a dreadful trainer in relation to the skills of driving a car, because there's very little, understand that in this industry there are different areas. So pick an area that interests you, learn as much as you can about it, get as much information about it from as many different places as you can, take your time to gain experience of actually putting into practice what you're sort of learning, gain the understanding that you need, and then make some content that will be useful to other people. Would probably be what I'd say to people.
I love that. I don't think I've heard it framed that way before in our industry. Almost like finding a niche. You get good at everything, but there's one thing you're going to specialize in, and that's the bit you focus on, but you can still train everyone and everything.
Yeah, it's a funny industry, isn't it? Because, I spend, and it's probably my frustration really, partly explains my frustration with DVSA, is that I spend the vast majority of my time training people in things that aren't really what I'm actually passionate about. So I'm helping people to pass a part three, on a day-to-day basis, going and seeing people and helping them to develop the skills, knowledge, and to whatever extent you can in that time, understanding of how they can then help somebody to, well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because when you compare what DVSA are looking for on a part three and a standards check, it fits in with what they're looking for on a learner driver test. Yeah. So when you weigh it up, what you're doing is you're training somebody to train somebody to pass a driving test is really what you're doing. And that's not the bit really that interests me at all. I'm far more interested and motivated by the side that I feel could potentially save somebody's life, i.e. the what happens to people when they get in a car. It's an interesting industry, because it's almost, and maybe one of the issues with the industry is that we're almost a kind of one size fits all. I say in our workshops quite often to people that just because I'm interested in it, and just because, the psychology side, the behavioral side, really the self-awareness and emotional intelligence side of what we do, or what we're sort of training young drivers to do, doesn't mean that I feel like it should be our role. Mean that I think that driving instructors are qualified to do it. There's just nobody else to do it. We are the only people to do it, because it's not done in education. People should come to us at the age of 17 understanding themselves far more than they do. They should have experienced themselves, although they've experienced themselves, but reflected on that experience far more than they're encouraged to do. They're just told not to do it again, And that's where we fell down as an industry. So now we have to be better, but are we trained as an industry to do that? No, not really. So if you want to be a trainer, think what interests you, think about where you could be useful to people, and dive into that. If your passion is skill, just get as much training and many courses, but just be careful with the skill that you're delivering to novice young drivers.
I will eagerly await the driving instructor union to bitch at me about this comment, but I'm going to make it anyway. Because if you look at the SAFE system, post-crash care is improving. Safer roads, again, take away the exception to the rules. Safe roads are improving. Mm-hmm. Vehicle safety is improving. What's one I missed? Cars, vehicles, post crash care, roads.
Enforcement?
No, not enforcement. Roads are speeds. Yeah, so there you go. Post crash care is improving. Speeds are improving because they're coming down. Look at Wales. Look at the positive impact that's had. Vehicles are improving. Postgres care is improving, drivers aren't improving. Yeah. Who's teaching the drivers?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Some of that has to fall on us. We're the ones that have the direct impact on the drivers. Yes, there's enforcement, as you mentioned, that can combat that. But those other four areas are all improving, taking away the exceptions to the rule. Drivers aren't, and who teaches them, you know?
And what do we teach them, and how do we teach them, and what should we be teaching them? There's all kinds of questions, and there's very little clarification. You know, if you take on board the national standards, that tells us how we should be teaching. If you take on board the syllabus, that tells us what we should be teaching. And then when you apply that to, or elements of it, to a standards check or a part three, which, okay, I get that doesn't, you know, but it's an awkward fit when you have to say to people last Friday at a workshop, oh yes, no, don't do that on your part three. You know, if this happens on your part three, maybe just touch on it. And then, but there's also, you know, the very serious reality that when you impact on a testing process, you change training, you know? And when you know, when I use the example of reversing around corners, and I used to have to, you know, go with a pupil, I go, oh, there's someone at this one. We'll go to the next one. Oh, there's someone at this one. I tell you what, we'll come back to it next week. Is that okay? Yeah, of course, no problem. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't think reversing around corners will save anyone's life. But it's the point that when you change the test, you change the training, because I could pick any corner I want now on any day at any time, and I would not be queuing for that corner. So when you make changes to, you know, people always come back at what we're sort of doing and go, yeah, but you can pull up. And I wait for the day that DVSA say, move the car if you want to. You know, if you have to move the car, move it. You know, what will happen to driver training in this industry if DVSA ever said, you can move the car if you need to? Yeah, of course, we wouldn't be moving cars.
Yeah.
In the same way that when they say you can pull up if you need to, people only pull up when they need to, and it impacts on the training that people receive. So I think that we need to look. I don't know what point it will happen, but I do think that, you know, if I was to put a 5-year period on it, there really needs to be a huge review into this side of the industry, and measures put in place to really develop what we're teaching, how we're teaching it, why we're teaching it. Otherwise, it won't get any better. It won't change, you know, and nothing really significantly has changed, even though 2014, you know, it was suggested that huge changes, and I mean huge changes, when you understand the national standards and you know, you read the ADI 1, those changes were supposed to be significant, by the way, but they've just not been.
Well, I'm going to pump the brakes on the EVSA conversation for now.
Yeah,
but I'm going to, just what you're saying, that reverser on the corner is actually a prime example of how I used to be a crap instructor, because I used to have students that struggled massively with that, because I always used to talk about it like it was on your test. It's now out of the test, it's easy now.
Mm.
Just tamp reverse around corner, reverse around corner.
Mm.
If they bump the curb, they fix it themselves.
Yeah.
Whereas when you put that, this is what will happen on your test aspect on it, they start struggling. It just shows how I didn't do a good job of that back in, 2018 before they changed it. But anyway, you joined the industry. You're now to Claire Wilmot until she finally decided to take you on, and then, you know, probably regretted afterwards, whatever. You've been on 64,000 different courses. You've told me how you hate nice people. The qualifications, you've become a trainer. So then next up was Kit. Mm. Tell me about Kit.
That was... It was Mick's idea, actually. I was helping him to run a Facebook group, and we obviously knew each other outside of that through Tri Coaching, I'd considered something locally, with Charles Royal, and we'd, you know, put a few things together and done a few, you know, smaller courses for local instructors and stuff. But it was Mick, his trailer training company, like everybody's who had a trailer training company, just disappeared overnight. And he came with an idea for us to get together, put some courses together, and create a training company. And at that point I thought, well, yeah, that'd be really great, you know? So we got together, we chatted it through. One of us, you know, i.e. the creative one, I'll leave that open to people. So one of us came up with the company name. So someone with a bit of creativity, and then the other one did a lot of organizing stuff, and stuff like that. We launched, and, you know, without going on and on about what we do, because people can, you know, can look at what we do enough. I feel it's been a success. I think we do a good job. And I think, although at times, you know, people might fall out with us, but I think whatever with that, I don't like falling out with people, but, you know, and I don't pull out with that many people that often, but I think our intentions have always been good. We're well intentioned, and I believe, based on the feedback that we've got, deliver good quality content, and we take it where people want us to take it to. So it's been really enjoyable, actually. I do feel like, you know, we're driving back from Wrexham on Friday evening, literally just thinking, wow, you're quite privileged, you know, quite a lucky person to do what you're doing.
I really like how you describe that. I thought that was a very fair description. I think from my perspective, I would say it has been a success. That's my definition of success, not yours. I don't know what yours is, but I think you've been a success. I think you've been a benefit to the industry, definitely. And I am looking forward to see what comes next. I think I always agree with everything, mm-hmm. and the way it goes about. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if maybe I push back slightly in your phrase, and if people falling out with you, or maybe you falling out with them. I don't know which way you'd look
yes.
at that.
Yes,
but I think that, yeah, definitely been a benefit to the industry. Are you trying to take over the industry? Because it does sometimes feel like that. And I mean that in a playful way.
Yeah, no, I know, I get it. Not at all. I think the biggest issue for me personally is that I just don't want to stop. You know, I don't want to stop creating, learning myself, developing myself. There must be loads more that I can know and understand, and help other people to know and understand, that's important in relation to what we do. And if there's stuff there that I think is important and can help people in relation to what we do as an industry, then that's what I want to do. So I get that. I've just literally this morning before you came done our application, or whatever you'd call it, for the Intelligent Instructor Awards for training providers, independent training providers of the year. One of the things is that, you know, at what point do we stop trying to create new content? You know, I do feel like we have the, and people can disagree, but I do feel like we have the biggest range of content in the industry, the biggest, i.e. we've got this, we've in car, out of the car, in person, classroom, one-to-one, online, workshops, video hub, ebooks, kit mag, you know, etc. But for selfish reasons, I don't want to stop. So
I don't think that's up for debate. I think you've definitely got the biggest range, variety, you know, ecosystem, whatever you want to call it. I hate to break it to you, though. I think the deadline for the awards was yesterday.
I know. Well, I hated breaking it to myself when I woke up at about 4 o'clock this morning and thought, oh, no, I fell asleep and I didn't do what we're supposed to do. Which is why you got a response to your question about 4 in the morning as well, because I fell asleep last night. And yeah, so
I did wonder, I think, is he that scared of this interview? That he's anyway, no, I haven't applied this year. But if you want to speak to someone about knowing when to stop, I'm your guy. What's next then? Is there anything you can tell us? Have you got anything in mind? Because I don't know what else I could be.
Yes, but before I answer that, I want a bit more information on what you mean when you say stop, and what is that about? Because I've already said that we'll be having words about this when we get together. So, what is that about? And I think people deserve a bit more information.
Well, I'm glad you're asking me this at the end of the podcast and not at the start, because more people will have switched off by now. Well, they have got, genuinely, I am, this almost made me reconsider genuinely ending the podcast was when I got my Spotify stats through, which, if I'm honest, most from a bollocks anyway. Mm. I know how they work, but I've got like one of the highest retention rates going for people listening all the way through. And I see that anyway, but it was like, oh, yes, because I was really, really, that's actually, I think, Matt, that's my best accolade, actually, just that, keep people going for the entire thing. I will answer the question, but I will be sort of going into more detail because I think it deserves it. There's a few reasons for this, and I'm going to be slightly careful how I phrase it because I haven't got the public phrasing of it right yet. Partly because I thought when you said you were going to ask me, I thought you meant off the record, but either way, there's an element of the podcast has run its course.
Disagree. Disagree. Carry on.
There is always more I can do. There will always be more. But there comes to a point when you ask people who they want on the podcast, and the response I get back is Bob and Ray and you. It's like, yeah, they've all got episodes. And that doesn't mean I don't want them back on. Next year, I intend on doing a bit of a greatest hits tour. Mm. There will be people coming back on, probably including yourself. I don't want to name people in case I don't get a chance or whatever. Although you're having a multi-series now. This is you, don't know. but there will be a greatest hits tour getting them people back on. But I'll use Bob as an example because I get on well with Bob. I feel like I can use this example. There's loads of Bob content. Mm. There's loads of Bob content in my podcast. There's loads of more Bob content in my premium membership. There's Bob content on Bob's membership. There's Bob content everywhere. Mm. We don't need Bob back on the podcast. If that's what people are wanting, then I don't need to do that anymore. Mm. There's no need for that. And that's like the bulk of what people want in these repeating guests. What I want is the outlandish guests. Mm. The people that no one else get on. Mm. Now, admittedly, they're starting to work their way into other places now, but the likes of Dr. Ian Greenwood, Ian Edwards, Dr. Box, Rebecca Morris, Sharon Huddleston, Dan Meredith, Robin Bates, Dino Sartelli, Simon Hartley, you know, these people who can bring in different perspectives. And yes, there's more of those to find, but it does partly because like, it feels like it's run its course. The other part is I have to be a bit selfish. At times, I love this podcast. I will never stop loving this podcast. Since I've said I'm going to end the podcast, I've changed my mind 17 times. But the podcast will end on December the 31st, 2026. That will be the last episode and I will cry. And that's fine. But I have to be selfish because when I look at what I get in return, and going back to what, actually, I'm going to frame that side differently. Something you said before was 100% correct. You said when you came in the industry, there was no instructor podcast to show you who was good. Mm. Yeah. That's there now. Mm. It's not just me. There's a few others that are doing it as well, but that's there now. So but I am perceived as the guy that speaks to the people that know what they're talking about. I'm not perceived as the person that knows what he's talking about. I'll use Bob again. Bob pays me one of the best compliments ever. I love it. It's one of my favorite ones. He calls me the Parkinson of driving instructors.
Yeah.
Who goes to Michael Parkinson for driver training? do you see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
There has to be a way for me now to turn this so that I can actually keep doing some of the podcast stuff and keep having people like yourself on doing the fun stuff, but also switch that around so that I can actually display a bit more of what I've got to bring and display a bit more of some of my qualities. So they're the two core reasons. It's I need to switch it as a way to actually get more of me across, and so I can give more to the industry rather than getting more from you, for example, and the idea of it feels a bit like it's run its course.
Okay. I'll accept that in part. Well, the concern is from my side that although you've got that content there, that's there, that we don't lose you, you know, and that we don't lose what you do. Now, even if what you do in the future isn't what you're doing now, you know, so I'm guessing there's ideas that you've got that around you doing something, but something that is different is kind of what I'm getting. And so long as that's the case, I accept it.
Yeah. Well, no, it's one of the things people have said, actually, is they don't want to lose me. And that's quite a nice thing to say. So I appreciate that. Thank you. The podcast is going away. I'm not.
Mm.
2026 is just going to be so much fun. And I've got loads of fun stuff planned up. And it feels like it's kicking off with this a little bit, because this is the third one of these I've done. I did one with Laura Morris, Diana Todd, and now you. And I enjoy these. This is a chance for me to go and get to know someone. And I don't know if I'll get any more of these done, because there is a lot of work in them. But, you know, it feels like it's kicking off. And then there's a green end of year green room. And then I've got some really cool plan, hopefully, for the podcast in January and going and beyond. It's going to be a really fun year. It's going to be a bit self-indulgent. I am going to do some episodes where I reckon there'll be a few people that roll their eyes and go, how on earth does this fit an instructor podcast? But that's what I've always done. I got the guy on that did Tai Chi to come and talk about posture in the car. You know, that's always my go-to example. I make it fit. And that's kind of a bit of a challenge for me as well. It's going to make it fun. There is a rebrand going on at the minute of the Instructor Podcast Premium. There's a rebrand going on that, and a slight shift in what that's going to be next year. You're part of that. I've kind of disclosed a bit of that to you already, and I'm very excited about that. And then at the end of 2026, I will have an idea what I'm doing in 2027. And yeah, I don't, it's not that I'm hiding anything. I don't want to say anything about that, but it's because I don't know for certain yet. I've got a few different avenues that I'm considering going down, and I can't do them all. So I need to decide where I take it. The thing I would say to people is, do not unsubscribe.
Yeah.
That feed will be there. The podcast feed will be there. I'm not taking it down. Yes, it'll cost you money to leave it up, but it's there for people to go back and listen to. It'll probably be close to 300 episodes when it wraps up. And the other thing I would add on to that is, you know full well that when it ends in December 2026, in January, there's going to be like a huge announcement, like the DVSA scrapping all standards checks or whatever it is. So I'll have to do an episode to cover it. So, you know, there might be something like that that goes on. Maybe I'll continue doing the end of year episodes once a year or something.
That'd I don't
know. But keep the feed open. Terry's not going anywhere. I will talk to myself in the third person. Terry's not going anywhere, and subscribe to the premium.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds a lot more, you know, positive than when you made the announcement, because I was like, oh, you can't do that. I'm not letting that happen. We're going to have words about that.
I'll tell you what, the interesting thing about human psychology, which was actually proved wrong today, actually, but often human psychology, is that I got one was from you, I believe, actually, if I remember correctly, one or two messages saying congrats on 250 episodes.
Yeah.
The positive one. when I said the podcast was ending, I've got dozens of episodes. So the human psychology, we get the negative, you get the response, but the positive, you don't. Having said that, I put my wins for the year out yesterday, and that's got really well. I put my fails for the out state, and not so well. So
okay,
swap round.
I wonder what that is. That's an interesting one.
And we'll cover them on next episode. Either way, let's just finish this off with telling us about Kit and what's potentially down the road.
There is something quite large that's in the process at the minute. If I'm honest, completely honest, I'm about a tenth of the way through it. About a tenth as far as I expected to be this time last year. So it was something that was started in January of this year. There's something quite big in the pipeline. It is really, it's about the fact that, and it's quite interesting because I think I'm quite known for being somebody who knows a lot about the research and things that went into the changes. And but I never actually realized, and I still don't know now because I forgot what Hermes stood for until I actually read it. And that was about, I don't know, I've read Hermes before, but I read the, I was flicking through my library on my ebooks, on my books app. I'm flicking through and Hermes just was, it just came out in the words underneath. I don't remember exactly what it is, but Hermes was a project designed at how we create safer drivers. And the heading for it was like something along high impact communication skills for driving instructors. That's what's required. So I'm in the middle of create is the thing. Our next big project, but it's all about developing communications because it's everything. Because when I sat down and pieced together what I wanted instructors to get out of it, everything that came back to me was communication. Every single element of it is the need for driving instructors to communicate at a very, very, very high level if we're going to create safer drivers. So there's something in the pipeline there that will be hopefully available, available for driving instructors in 2027, if not before. Watch this space for that. Beyond that, we're just, you know, me and Mick will be working together still to deliver the workshops until we can't physically do that anymore. When the next thing is on the horizon, we'll be working together to deliver that instead. And then with other things like Mick's going across the country or around the country with Train the Trainer, I'm going around the country and I've had to shelve our in-car coaching course, which is probably the favorite course or my favorite course to deliver, because really the uptake has been PDIs mainly this year, and it's not fair because they're coming to this course for help to get through part three, and 70-80% of the delegates that are coming are PDI. So literally had to shelve what I was supposed to do, spend nearly three months creating a new in-car course for just for rescue. So that's reasonably new. We did the first run a couple of weeks ago, me and Nikki Binns. That went really well. That was really well received. We've got more of that next year, so I'll be going across the country doing that. The workshops will continue, and then we'll see beyond that 2027 what happens. We might be at a point, sadly for me, at that point where we think, can we really do any more? Is there any more to, not that there's no more to do, but is there any more that we can actually physically deliver to people? And, you know, do people get sick of, you know, of there being such an amount of content? But I don't want to get to that stage. So
I'll bring the instructor podcast back for a one-off special. All right, cool. Well, that feels like a cool point to leave this. So I'll finish by saying thank you for joining for this one.
Oh, no, it's been brilliant. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
The Instructor Podcast with Terry Cook. Talking with leaders, innovators, experts and game changers about what drives them.